Why are they doing this? They said when you got here, the whole thing started. I think you're the cause of all this. I think you're evil. Evil!
They're coming to get you, Barbara.
Monsters, John. Monsters from the It.
A fire thaw! A fire thaw! A fire thaw!
Swallow this.
The power of Christ compels you! The power of Christ compels you!
Have you ever heard of Candyman?
You moved the cemetery, but you left the bodies, didn't you?
It rubs the lotion on its skin or else it gets the hose again.
You don't know what death is.
This thing doesn't want to show itself. It wants to hide inside an imitation.
I'm the messenger of God. You're doomed. We can stay here.
God is dead!
Satan lives!
It's alive, Luke. It's alive! It's alive! It's alive!
The animals are contagious. What fire? Stop! You've no idea!
You're not afraid of the dark, are you?
Whatever you do, don't fall asleep.
It is time to keep your appointment with the Wicker Man.
Mr. Vice President, Mr. Secretary, the missiles are flying.
You see me in hell, Mr. Thorne. There is a shout of sentence.
I can't lie to you about your choices, but you have my sympathy.
This little procedure is called making a head of a mistake.
I'm not gonna hurt you. I'm just gonna bash your brains.
There is no one watching out for us, Meryl. We are all on our own.
And there's no more room in hell than the dead who walk here.
The events of that day were to lead to the discovery of one of the most bizarre crimes in the annals of American history, the Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Goes a little mad sometimes. We all go a little mad sometimes.
Something in the middle. Shut the door, my God. You gotta tell them. Silent Breed is people.
You are about to experience the awe and mystery which reaches from the inner mind to the outer limits.
That's it, man. Game over, man. It's game over.
Hello, welcome once again to Dark Discussions, your place for discussion of horror film, fiction, and all that's fantastic. I am one of your co-hosts, Philip, from the state of New Hampshire in the U.S. of A., and with me in the state of Michigan.
This is Eric.
Eric, how's it going, man?
I am well.
Excellent. And in the state of Massachusetts?
Hey, everyone, this is Abe.
Abe, how's it going, man?
I'm doing well.
Very good. Our co-host Mike is supposed to join us. However, he's somewhat late, and he's not responding to texts at this time. So we decided to at least start the preliminaries and what we've been watching and such, and hopefully join sometime in that time frame.
Also, go to the light, Mike. Go to the light.
That's right. Also, Christy Peterson-Schoonover was going to join us tonight. However, due to commitments at work where she is needed for an extra 2 hours. I told her she gets in early, but it's looking like she's stuck there for another 2 hours. Anyway, first off, Eric, you do another podcast with your buddy Dan.
I do. It's a general interest podcast called the Askancity Podcast. That's spelled A-S-K-A-N-C-I-T-Y. You can find it on Stitcher and the iTunes Store.
Excellent, excellent. And Abe, you do a genre book.
Yeah, when I'm able to update it, it's called The Reeler Movie Reviewer. Reeler spelled R-E-E-L-E-R, Movie Reviewer. It's a multi-genre blog. You can find by going to your basic search engine and just typing it in. Or you can visit Dark Discussion's main page and look on the right-hand side. You'll also find links to other goodies like Eric's blog and things by Mike and some of our buddies.
Yeah, that's right. Mike does another genre blog entitled unnaturalselections.com, and Abe is referring to www.darkdiscussions.com, which is us. And on the front page, as he said, on the right are links to all these things, and then at the bottom of every page of the site we have links to our email, darkdiscussions@aol.com, the Facebook group Dark Discussions Podcast, Twitter Dark Discussion 1, Stitcher, the RSS feed, and so forth. And so join us wherever you can or whenever you can, because we're always looking for people out there and who you are and if you are listening.
We're always watching.
That's
Somebody's
right.
Somebody's watching me.
Whoa, yikes.
Now, Mike just texted. He's actually writing right now, so we'll see what he has to say. Anyway, Abe, there was a big event that you and your mother, who is a writer, and myself were at. What was that event? And could you explain who was there and what was it about?
I forgot the official name of it, but we had a few famous faces there.
Yeah, Abe, before you begin, yes, it was called the Merrimack Valley Halloween Writer Book Signings. Yeah, something.
Something. Yeah. The book thingy.
Yeah.
Yes, it was a mini little event. We had quite a few interesting faces there. Among them, we had Brian Keene, who is known for writing several horror stories. One known as The Rising, which was his first book, City of the Dead, and Ghoul, The Conqueror of Worms. We also had Joe Hill, who showed up later that day. We didn't get to see him. I at least didn't get to see him, unfortunately.
Yeah, yeah, he was there. He was there for a good 4 hours. Also, Christopher Golden, New York Times best-selling horror writer, was there. He actually ran the event and was able to bring in Brian Keene and Joe Hill. Also, Paul Tremblay, a new author who suddenly became semi-famous because Stephen King, out of the blue, read his book with no recommendation and thought it was fantastic, his latest book, and tweeted saying, "This guy's a great author," and suddenly he's been kind of, you know, getting some notoriety, positive notoriety. And
Stephen King is good like that.
Yeah, yeah. He did that with a couple other authors too that made them pretty famous, and maybe this will happen with Paul Tremblay. He also, Stephen King, by the way, speaking as King, he, on September 13th, I noticed out of the blue, he posted that he saw the film These Final Hours and highly recommended it to all his Twitter listeners. So,
yeah, I saw that too. That was kind of interesting. That was right after we'd recorded the episode.
Hello, yeah. Honey.
Yeah. Ah, we hear Mike. Mike is here.
I'm here.
Don't sound so happy about it.
And then I clicked the Skype button and says, "Do you want to download Skype?" It's like, I did this shit the last time. Apparently, when you upgrade to Microsoft or Windows 10, it removes the Skype button or Skype tile and replaces it with a Get Skype tile. So every time, without, I didn't notice it actually saying Get Skype as opposed to just the normal Skype thing. So,
So you had to install Skype.
Oh, I didn't have to this time. I did last time. I might not have had to do it last time, but then I had to go in and dig around and find where the actual Skype was.
It happens. So anyway,
Mike's terrible, horrible, no good day.
So, no, it's not terrible, horrible, no good, but it's just really freaking busy.
And anyway, so what we've discussed, just the introductions, let folks know about unnaturalselections.com, and that Ms. Peterson Schoonover may not join us tonight due to the same issue you had, which is she's forced to stay at work till 9 o'clock tonight.
I thought I saw her on the list, no? And now I've got the cat wanting me to play with him.
I put her on just in case, on the Skype list, just in case she wanted to join us.
Okay.
Assuming she could, but it appears not. But hopefully she will. If not, we miss you, Chrissy, and we'll hope to have you on in a future episode. Let's see, so Abe, you were discussing the Merrimack Valley Halloween Horror Book Fair with Brian Keene, Joe Hill, Christopher Golden, somewhat now known author Paul Tremblay, among many others. Abe, did you buy any books there, by the way?
Yes, I bought one from a Miss Mary San Giovanni.
Okay.
She's actually was sitting between Brian Keene and what was it, Rio?
Okay, it doesn't matter where she was sitting.
No, I got the first volume of her trilogy, the Hollower trilogy. It's a psychological monster story. I actually just started. I only got maybe like 12 pages into it, but I'm liking what I'm seeing so far. It's just been a little tricky again, farther into it because I've been juggling classes and stuff. But I really like her, like it so far.
Yeah, that's good. I bought two books by Sarah Langdon. She wrote three novels, to my knowledge, and I've read one of them called The Missing, which is fairly much like a Stephen King book, and it was pretty good. And so she happened to be there. So, yeah, actually, she's another author of note that was at this event. And I bought her other two books, Audrey's Room and The Keeper. And so I'm going to check those out. I also bought a child's book called C is for Cthulhu, which is basically the alphabet picture book for children, but it's all Lovecraft stuff. So that was kind of cool.
Nice.
Yeah. And then I...
So Phil was D for Dagon?
That's exactly right, Mike. That's right.
And M for Miskatonic?
That's exactly right, Mike.
Hold on. And N for Necromancy? Necronomicon? Yes,
that's exactly right, Mike.
Spoiler alert.
And A is for the guy that wrote Necronomicon.
Alistair
Abdullah or Al
Abdul. Oh, right, the mad sheik or something like that.
Yeah, the mad Arab or whatever they call them. Yeah. And then L is for Lovecraft. So it's a high recommend the book. My daughter absolutely loved it. She's like has to have it read every day now. So
the more you know,
read that.
And to be honest, it's worth for adults as well.
Was Z for Zionist conspiracy?
Mike. No.
Well, he was a little bit of a. He had some issues.
Well, his wife was Jewish.
Oh, she was? I thought he had some.
He may, but he still married a woman of Jewish ancestry before they divorced.
Well, she was one of the good ones.
It was a different era, a different time. But either way, high recommend. You can find that on Amazon. I actually sold a couple of books. I sold Canopic Jars and Bugs, Tales That Creep, Slither, and Crawl, which both include some of my short stories. So that was pretty cool. And the event was well received, and they had a lot of folks that showed up, and they had a bunch of panels as well. So
let me ask, because when I talk to vendors, you know, they often are careful about not wanting to say anything bad about a show or what their turnout was. Or did you sell a good number of books? Was it like three books? I mean,
who, me or
those? You?
Oh, I actually only sold three books.
So. I got it on the nose. All right.
Yep. Brian Keene did pretty damn good. He sold out. I was with the New England Horror Writers table, so you know there was not just my books on the table. There was numerous folks, but Brian Keene, he I think he may have done the best out of everybody in the whole event, honestly. Though I'm not sure about Joe Hill. I'm sure Joe Hill probably did well too, but Keene's table he cleared off pretty quick. But it really depends on who, you know, what people were looking for and the name. So Keen did well, Hill did well, Golden did well. The guy that had the Cthulhu books did really well because, you know, that was a kind of cool gift type of thing for adults and kids alike. There was artists there. I forget the guy's name, but he's done a lot of covers for Cemetery Dance Magazine. And he was there. His artwork was fantastic and whatnot. So a lot of good stuff. I went. We did not go as Dark Discussions. So no interviews. Anyway, that's pretty much that. So, Eric, let's get into what we've been watching and things like that, news in the genre and whatnot. One news I wanted to mention was These Final Hours. Is now going to be a TV series, at least. It's in pre-production, so whether they're going to go the 24 route where each episode is an hour in real time, I don't know. Because, you know,
it's a bad idea. I won't be watching.
Yeah.
That sounds like a strange idea. I agree.
Yeah, but that's some news there.
Well, here's the thing is, and this goes back to what came up in that podcast, is how much time are they covering? Are they covering the, whatever, 12 hours after the after impact, or are they going to cover the 5 years leading up to it? Because those would be two very different stories told two very different ways, and I think one would be interesting as a series, and one would be probably less so, unless it was done specifically as a limited series.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it would be... I mean, until we get closer, I mean, like, you know, the Evil Dead series, I mean, people are wondering what that was going to be about. And then finally, as we get closer, we kind of figure out what it's going to be about. So same here, Mike. You're absolutely right. And a good question. And I'm not even sure if it will actually make it to final production, but who knows? We'll find out. It'll be curious to see if it's just one season or two. But if you're right, Mike, they could make it more based off of pre-impact, you know? So.
Well, but then you get the question of, well, are they going to turn it into... You know, like Deep Impact, you know, are you going to be seeing, well, this is the stuff that's happening at the highest levels, and how does the Congress and the President and the UN, how do they react? Are you going to see like snippets from all around the globe, or are they going to take a, you know, sort of Walking Dead approach, which is just going to focus on one family that's completely out of the loop, and so you're never really going to find out like the big stuff they'd really, so that those, some of us would be interested in seeing.
Right, and everything you say, Mike, makes me feel a little more like Eric, which is it's going to be horrible because the thing, reason that film is so good is specifically based off of the one person and his journey of deliverance during the last 12 hours of life, and everything you mentioned, even though it sounds interesting, it's definitely not these final hours, right?
Well, yeah, but I mean, I'm thinking, I know Hollywood rips shit off all the time.
Yeah.
But it may just be, you know what? It's an Australian film. They could probably get the rights for $1.38.
Sure, sure.
And it'd be easier to do that than to rip it off and have to deal with the lawsuit and then fight it off. It may just been easier to take that idea as simply as the concept,
right?
And then completely redo it. And you know, so again, it as always, it all comes down to the execution. You know, I don't know anybody that thought when Cheers ended that giving Frasier his own show was a great idea.
No, that's a fair point. And sure enough, it was. Or it turned out to be a good one, yeah. Yep. No, that's fair. That's fair. So we'll have to see. It's obviously going to be a good amount of time from now, but it was just announced in the past 3 or 4 days, it seems. So, but yeah. Also, some other news. It appears that there's a Gamera film being made.
Oh.
Yeah, so it's a reboot. I just posted in the Dark Discussions podcast Facebook group a link to some of the CGI that is being used for the film that they've released. Daniel Craig has announced that he does not want to be Bond after this film.
Yeah, he worded it a little more strongly than that. I believe the exact word is he would rather slit his wrists.
Well, he worded it both more strongly, but also more conditionally, which is, he basically said, right now, which could be, right, he doesn't want to do any more Bond. He did also say, if I did it again, it'd just be for the money. But I can also say, you know, it could also be read as, all right, once he's had a year off and the film is more in the rearview mirror, you know, he may be more open to it. But probably right now he's done and he's exhausted making this movie and just doesn't want to think about making another one at this point.
Which is possible, yeah. Also, Dark Was the Night is now on Netflix. It's a film that me and Eric saw earlier this year. We thought it was pretty good, except for the last maybe 10 minutes or so. And a couple of folks on the Facebook group, Patrick Lacey and Jason Lloyd, have chimed in, as well as David Michael Farley, and this is what they have to say, which is, Jason Lloyd wrote, "This was top 10 material for me for 2015 before the finale. Even without the CGI being a bit disappointing, and with the final encounter being disappointing, I still give it a 7 out of 10. Patrick Lacey wrote the same thing. He says, loved it up until the last 10 minutes. And David Michael Farley said the first 90% of the movie was really good. So it pretty much just says
the exact, only one with a problem with the ending.
Yeah. So you said the, you said it like a month ago, or 2 months ago to me, what you thought about the, that the last 10 minutes, and these three folks agreed with you. So, but either way, it's, worth checking out. Kevin Durand stars in it. He's the guy in The Strain. And it is worth checking out because it's on Netflix if you get Netflix. And then also released, this week on Netflix was Tremors 5. So that may be a curiosity, at least, if not a good film.
Speaking of Netflix and entertainment news, Netflix just announced they're raising the price of their most popular plan. So it'll go to $9.99 a month.
And what is that popular plan?
Pretty much unlimited streaming on, unlimited streaming on multiple devices.
Oh, so you're saying basically the regular VOD part of...
Yeah, it's getting bumped from $7.99 to $9.99.
Oh, those pricks. There's no grandfathering in or anything?
I had thought that it had been bumped before and that the $7.99 was the grandfathered in price.
They talked about it before, and now they're actually doing it.
Interesting. We do have a couple of emails and such. First off, I wanted to say something about a couple of folks that listened to our Drag Me to Hell episode, episode 202. And Shauna Jordan wrote, love this movie and the Dark Discussions episode. So good job, guys. From what I've been able to tell, people who went in not realizing there would be comedic elements have problems with the film. I knew going in, however, so the slapstick and gross out humor parts only added to my enjoyment. Michelle Barkley commented, saying, first and only time I went to see a movie twice in the theater. The first viewing was such an incredible experience for me, laughing 1 minute and literally jumping out of my seat 10 seconds later, and I am hard to make jump. Such a fun ride. And then Sean Quinn Robinson said he hated the lead character because she killed a cat.
Right?
Yeah. Then we have Chris
Jenner. But only once, so clearly they had 8 more lives to go.
That's a fair point. Fair point.
Just saying.
Now, Chris Genro wrote a comment on our Facebook group. He wrote, sorry, gentlemen, I'm super behind on my podcast listening, but I just want to congratulate you on 200 episodes. Episode 200 about John Carpenter's The Thing was such a fun listen. You could really tell you all really have a love and fondness for the movie. It's by far one of my favorites as well. We need to get Philip to do a podcast where he just reads quotes from horror films. He just cracks me up every time. Marin! Because I did it a couple of times. I've got a question for you all as well, and maybe you can tackle it on the podcast. Are there any other films you've come across that give you the same sense of isolation and paranoia? What makes The Thing stand so high above any others? And thanks for what you do, and here's to your 200th episode. So that was nice. Any other films you guys wanted to mention that brought
isolation,
paranoia?
Isolation, yes, but combined with paranoia, I don't think so.
Yeah, that's a good point. I haven't really thought about it, really. I mean, there's a lot of films with isolation. I mean, you can go with, like, just people... And even in cities, like, you know, Requiem for a Dream or Red, White, and Blue or whatever, those type of films are people are isolated and feel depressed and whatnot. Paranoia, though, that's a good point, Eric. I don't know.
Maybe Night of the Living Dead?
That's a good one, Mike. Yeah. I mean, Eric, excellent one, Eric.
Oh, yeah? Now I'm thinking, I was thinking movies after that. I was thinking, I misunderstood the question.
That's trickier. I can think of one of each, but not both.
Yeah, the combination is pretty rare.
Well, and really, anyone that tries it usually just ends up, making
with a boring movie. Like,
well, they end up making one of these unintentional thing remakes. But you know what? I could go with
Harbinger Down.
Yeah, I could go with like the ending of the 1978 or 79 remake of Invasion of the Body Snatchers.
Okay.
Yeah. All right.
Now it doesn't start there, right? You know, it's but by the time you get to the end,
right?
You definitely have that end. A classic. Oh, we're all fucked. Ending.
Yeah. Yeah. That's true.
I like that ending.
What's that?
I like that ending.
Well, that's why it's a classic ending, because you liked it.
Yeah,
I can't think of anything else.
It's weird. That's the line that Donald Sutherland will be most remembered for.
Which one's that again?
His last line in Invasion of the Body Snatchers.
Oh, I guess that's a line, yeah.
It's hard to put on a tombstone, but, you know.
Well, that's well. He's Canadian anyway, so who cares?
and my understanding is a bit of a prick, but to work with. But
is that true? Interesting. I did not know that.
So anyhow,
and we do have one email here from a listener that Eric knows personally, Kevin Letts, and you guys went to high school together, and he lived.
Oh, it goes further back than that. We went to preschool together.
How about that? Yeah, I think he moved to St. Louis now, so he's at the crossroads of America. I think that's what
it's
called.
Name for it.
Yeah, I've never been, but I wouldn't mind checking out. But anyway, here's his email, and he writes. All right, here we go, gentlemen. Of Dark Discussions Podcast. Congrats again on making it to your 200th episode. After listening to Michelle Barkley, I'm not the only one who found Abe's rant hysterical. And she's referring to your rant about how bad you thought The Gallows was. I still make sure to listen to each podcast that comes out. And like Michelle Barkley, I found the Conjuring episode my favorite. One thing I'd like to clarify is that in your Drag Me to Hell episode, Christians never sacrificed animals. Good thing, too, sacrificing cows, sheep, rams, and goats is not particularly appealing. Keep up the great and fun work. Your fan, now living in St. Louis, Kevin. We did get someone that tweeted one of our tweets, which was I want to thank those folks. Megaton, they also have a website. They actually tweeted out me and Mike's Planet of the Apes episodes, as well as me and Mike's The Mist Frank Darabont episode, because his website, Megaton, Megaton, at Post Apocalyptic on Twitter, are big fans of post apocalyptic and apocalyptic genre material, so they always post about books, stories, movies, and things that are related to that. And so they posted our These Final Hours episode. So thank you to cool. Megaton. Yep. So that was kind of cool that they did that. And that's it for that. I do know some of you folks have some movies and books or something that you may want to let folks know that you've seen. I know, Eric, you saw a movie called The Martian or something?
I did. It is indeed The Martian, pretty big now. It's getting good reviews and big box office based on a book, which I have also read. I really enjoyed the movie, and it was really interesting in that the hours – it's a 2-hour and 20-minute movie. It's not a short movie, and yet it is still a total Reader's Digest version of the novel. There's a lot of detail in the novel that is not in the movie. So I recommend going to see the movie. It is good entertainment. And then after you've seen the movie, go read the book because there's even more. So I give thumbs up to The Martian.
See, I'm kind of tired of this politically correct bullshit.
What?
He's not a fucking Martian. He's an Earthling that illegally immigrated to Mars. He snuck over the frickin' border. He doesn't just get to become a Martian because he got in and didn't get caught. I'm sorry.
Well, he doesn't refer
doesn't
to himself.
Belong there.
He refers to himself as something else. You'll have to watch the movie to find out what he calls himself towards the end.
Probably screwed. That would be my guess.
Well, we'll have to see. Anything else, Eric?
Yeah, I finished season 10 of Supernatural. I bought that season, and of course, right after I finished it, it became available on Netflix. Wouldn't you know it? But yeah. If you could push through season 7, 8, 9, and 10 are pretty good. So I can give that a recommend. And then I watched a movie last night on Netflix called White Rabbit, which was kind of interesting. It's not for everybody. It's a slow.
Is that the one with Nicole Kidman in it?
No. I think that's Rabbit Hole.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Or something. This one's called White Rabbit. And it's basically the story of a boy who grows up to be a teen that goes on a shooting spree in his high school. And it's basically showing what he goes through to lead up to that event. So it's kind of on topic right now with all the shootings that have been happening in the recent past. And I thought it was interesting, although it will not be for everybody. So yeah, if you like slow dramas, I think Phil would like this because it's got some of the pretentious douchebaggery going on. It's not a fast paced movie though. So if you like slow dramas, then it sounds like your kind of thing, but, it'll have a select audience.
Worth the episode?
I don't know. I enjoyed it. It's not going to be for everybody, so I don't know if it would be worth doing an episode on.
So is it other genre?
Somebody else should watch it and chip in.
Is it other genre or is it horror?
It's horrific in that it ends with a bunch of innocent people getting shot. But that's pretty clear from the beginning of the movie. It's not like a surprise.
Are any of them kids?
They're it's a high school.
Awesome.
Is it a top 10?
No.
No, okay. All right. Very good.
Hold on. Dog.
What's
the dog factor? Come on.
There is a dog. We don't find out the final fate of the dog.
All right.
Oh, dear.
Uh-oh.
All right. No worries. So,
no, the dog's fine. I know the dog will be good. He's good. He made it.
Anything else?
And then I also watched a horrible, horrible movie called 10.0 Earthquake, which Phil might like because the dog lives at the end.
Nice. That's
good. Like, the last shot of the movie is the dog in slow-mo running for the helicopter.
So is it a San Andreas sci-fi movie ripoff of San Andreas?
Absolutely.
Okay. And that was on Netflix?
Not nearly as entertaining as San Andreas.
On Netflix?
Yes, it was on Netflix, yep.
All right, very good.
Anything else? 10.0 Earthquake.
10.0
Earthquake. That's it for this week.
Thanks for taking the bullet.
Yeah, no problem.
Let's see what else. For me, I'll just go quick. I saw a film called Hidden. It's been on VOD, iTunes for over a month, but it wasn't available for rent, only buy until October 5th. So once it
turned, I hate that shit.
Yeah, it's terrible. So it turned October 5th and I rented it, and, it stars, that Swedish guy from True Blood, I forget his name, Skarsgård or something, I don't know what his name is, but it's basically about a family, a mother, father, and daughter in a bomb shelter, and something happened outside, and then we have flashbacks that slowly bring it to what it is. The screenplay for Hidden was one of those big, hot properties for years, and then it was made 3 years ago as a movie, after being bought for big bucks by like Universal or something. And for some reason, the film sat in a bank vault or something for 3 years. And it was finally released this year rather than at theaters, like I guess it was supposed to. And it's actually a pretty good film. So with all that stated, you think, there was this great screenplay that the film wasn't going to be any good. It was actually a pretty good film. I would recommend all you guys to see it. It is, Mike, you probably would like it because it's not a zombie film, but it's a virus type film.
Right. Are there any, I'm just curious, are there any names in it that made them go, well, you know, this is a hot actor right now. Let's maybe try to get.
Yes, the Swedish guy from True Blood.
Oh, right. Okay, you mentioned that. But yeah, he would have been hotter 3 years ago when the damn show was still on the air.
Well, that's the thing. It was made when he was just breaking out and becoming one, like the big breakout character actor from True Blood. And then for some reason, it just sat on a shelf for 3 years after. So it makes no sense, except that they thought it maybe was more art house or something, and it wouldn't be worth. You know what it is. They probably were sitting on it, saying we got to somehow figure out how to release this, and then it just kept on sitting there in purgatory for 3 years until the point says, let's just drop it on VOD now that True Blood's gone. So that's all I can think of. Whether it would have made money at the theaters, I don't know. But it's not a bad film by any means. It's actually a pretty damn good film. I was pleasantly surprised because I was thinking it was going to be horrible. But I'm glad I did rent it because it's actually a pretty damn good film. So if you like zombie type films, even though it's not really a zombie film, it's worth a rental. Definitely check it out. It's called Hidden, Hidden. I also went back. I went back to Walking Dead. I ripped it pretty bad in episode 203 and Fear of the Walking Dead. And I got through both season 5 and season 1 of the two respective shows. And actually, they bounce back and are actually pretty good. So this whole show has always been anger and love, as you know, for the 5 years that I've.
Yeah.
Yeah, and sure enough, that's how season 5 was. It turned out to be pretty good at the end of the season. And then Fear of the Walking Dead, the last 3 episodes redeem after episode 4 sucked, I thought.
Well, and what I'm hearing, I may have been wrong about Fear of the Walking Dead, where I said that, you know, I felt like I was probably the only one that would have been interested in the establishment, like, of the temporary civilian government and all the stuff. But apparently a lot of people were upset with the 9-day fast forward. So that probably was a bad call on their part. And for the people who complain there's not enough zombies, then I think that's a fair complaint, even though I know it's supposed to be at the beginning of the zombie apocalypse. You remember the whole thing takes basically a month in Walking Dead world.
Right.
There are plenty of zombies around by this point, but they do save them all for the end.
They do.
I still have a problem that there's still too many characters that I don't know if there's any characters I can outright say I dislike, but I just really don't care about. But I do like, you know, there was the fast talker, the guy, the black guy in the suit that they got in the last two episodes. And he's a little bit of an arch character, but I enjoy the character. And, you know, I enjoy the Ruben Blades character, who was from Salvador or...
Yeah, El Salvador. He plays a character from I think it's El Salvador.
Right.
And he's the barber.
Right, the barber. And, you know, I like that character because of sort of the dark parts of his character. Right. And it'll be interesting to see where they go. But, yeah, I mean, I understand that the ratings declined considerably from where it started. So it did lose a lot of people. They are probably going to have to figure out how to correct it. I think they ended on a strong note. And Walking Dead, they're at the point now in that series where it is time to start sort of rebuilding civilization. You get to episode, was it 5.9 or 5.09?
5.10.
Where they are at they're the absolute nadir. And it is at least as far as the comics, as far as I've read, that is the low point of the series. And
for the television series, 5.9 was arguably the worst episode of the entire television show, The Walking Dead. And then 5.10, they redeem it.
That 5.9 is the one where the character dies that we won't spoil.
No, I'm sorry. Then it's not 5.9. It's 5.10. That's the worst episode ever. And then 5.11 is where they get to their place. Because 5.11 is the... out of 9, 5.10 is the episode where they're just walking for the whole show and there's nothing happens. It's just a horrible episode.
And then because they had just lost 2 members of the cast, and it's them sort of being in shock afterwards, but
yeah,
you know,
it's just a terribly boring episode. Yeah.
Yeah, not a lot happens.
Yeah. One thing about that black guy in the Fear of the Walking Dead, I was worried that he was going to be a top government official and he was going to be, quote unquote, the evil government because of what he does at the beginning of episode 4. And I'm thinking, oh my God, this show's going to suck. And then fortunately they redeemed the whole thing in episodes 5 and 6. So yeah, it'll be curious, to see where they go with both. And then I watched The Strain and, finished that. Last 3 episodes were really dark and was what, I was hoping for with, The Strain, which is a scary, dark show, and they're going there now, which was pretty cool. And then I watched the first episode of the new TV show Blind Spot, which is a ABC program about a nude woman that's in a huge duffel bag, and they think it's a bomb, and then she comes out of the bag in Times Square, and she's tattooed. And every
it was like Memento, the series, right?
Yeah, exactly. But it's better than Memento, in my opinion. At least the idea is better. It's a high recommend
because it has a nude woman in a bag in Times Square, right?
So. with tattoos. No, because it's an awesome concept. Because here's this woman that has all these things on her tattoos, and each tattoo means a crime or some government conspiracy or some act of quote unquote badness by someone of importance, and they're deciphering these, and she doesn't know who she is because they've discovered this protein in her brain that is usually used for other illnesses, and so she doesn't know who she is, she doesn't know why the tattoos are on her, and one of the tattoos is huge on her back that says the name of an FBI agent, and yet he doesn't even know who she is. And so it's a really cool concept. So I watched the first episode last night. It's streaming. They're only done 3 episodes so far. And I'm looking forward to see episode 2 and 3 that are already out, and then follow the show the rest of the season as they go ahead. So yeah, it's a really cool idea. The only thing is I wish I had thought of that idea myself, because it's a kind of cool idea. But anyway, that's pretty much for me. What about you, Mike?
As I was kind of implying, I've been really, really busy, so I haven't had really much of a chance to watch anything. Although I did just find out I had ordered the new Eli Roth, I don't know if he produced movie The Stranger.
Oh yeah.
And I just got an email from Amazon telling me that they've refunded me a penny because the price dropped. So woohoo.
That's not bad. Take it.
Yeah, I'm not. I've given them enough pennies. I'll take whatever they're going to give me back. I am happy to see there were a lot of trailers for upcoming horror films. Like I was happy to see Scouts versus Zombies. Apparently, Willie will be in theaters on Halloween. they saw the trailer for Krampus in theaters, so I'm guessing there's a good chance that might actually make it in theaters.
You know, I was not interested in that movie until I saw the trailer. It looks like it might be okay.
And there is a trailer for, I can't remember what it's called, but it's another horror anthology, which does have a Krampus segment in it. So it's funny, we're getting 2 Krampuses and a short bit. And that's probably going to be a direct to video thing. I'm blanking on the title right now. But possibly the best trailer I saw, as we know, any day now will be hitting, not only are we at the 30th anniversary of Back to the Future, but we'll be hitting the date that Marty goes to in 2015.
Oh,
you know, I actually, believe it or not, I listen to a fantasy football podcast through ESPN, and they have a celebrity league. And one of the participants in their celebrity league is Michael J. Fox. So I actually just got to hear an interview with Michael J. Fox about that today. Apparently he's playing a Jimmy Kimmel appearance on that day.
Cool. Will he be dressed up as his daughter or, you know?
He didn't say that.
but there's still a chance the Cubs could end up winning the World Series this year. But back in 1985 or 1989, they didn't account for the expanded playoff format. But they did have Universal put out the trailer for Jaws 19.
Right.
which was kind of fun as they go through every Jaws film up through, you know, from 1 through 18. Because as we remember, Jaws 19 in 3D was in Back to the Future 2. But anyway, so that was fun. If you look online for that, for Jaws 19, I'm sure you'll find the trailer.
Anything else, Mike?
Well, no, I've just got a cat who won't tire right now. But other than that, I'm good.
Have you seen The Stranger yet, the Eli Roth producer?
No, I've just got it sitting in front of me on my pile.
Taunting you.
Taunting me.
Very well. Let's see what else. The only other thing I wanted to mention before we get to Abe is I've watched two Steve Jobs documentaries on iTunes. So.
Wow. Okay.
Yep.
Were they scrubbed clean because they were on iTunes or?
No. They were, one was pretty unbiased and one was just talked about his company and technical accomplishments. So they were fair. They were fair. Even though the one that was a little unbiased, was a little, you know,
it is what
it's, yeah, exactly. So Abe, what about yourself?
Aside from delving into The Hollower, I did see two trailers for two different films I'm looking forward to. The first is Krampus,
yep,
which I think looks like it's going to be a lot of fun.
Yep, Mike was just mentioning that. And why don't you tell people what a Krampus means?
All right, so it's like the opposite of Santa Claus. It's a demon form of folklore that actually, where Santa Claus gives presents to good little boys and girls, Krampus is the one that punishes those that misbehave.
Naughty!
Yeah. Yes.
And according to some legends, he basically abducts the children. I don't know if that's all of the, you know, if that's consistent. You know, yeah, but
it seems to be different from different interpretations. So it varies.
Does it look comedic or scary?
It's actually a black comedy,
is what it looks like. It's by the same guy who did Trick or Treat.
Okay. Yeah,
gotcha.
But it looks like a lot of fun. It looks like they are mixing up practical effects effectively. They got some really cool looking evil dolls and elf creatures and stuff. And from what I can see of Krampus himself, he looks actually pretty intimidating. So I'm guessing this should be quite a romp. The second film I'm looking forward to is called The Hollow. And that's not like hollow, but hollow, like H-A-L-L-O-U. It's about this family that moves into this old mill house after getting some land. But it turns out to be the territory of some horrible ancient creatures. It looks from what I've read about it, it's going to be all practical effect monster effects. And the creatures apparently have a really interesting design to them that fits the setting or something like that. I didn't want to delve too much into it because I didn't want to like spoil myself what these things are going to look like. But it looks pretty awesome, especially apparently our lead main character is going to try to fight him off with a flaming scythe, which looks actually pretty awesome. It's also starring Michael McElhone, who played Roose Bolton from the Game of Thrones series.
Oh, okay. That's cool.
Yeah. My guess is going to be a limited theatrical release with some Amazon Instant Video kind of deal going on. I don't think it's going to be a big release, but it does look like fun.
All right. Sounds good. Yeah, sounds interesting. Any further things?
No, not on my end.
All right. Anybody else want to mention anything? Any other news or trailers or anything? Anyone? All right. I guess not. All right. So with that stated, Eric, why don't you let everybody know what we're going to discuss tonight?
Tonight, we're going to be discussing Eli Roth's latest movie in theaters, The Green Inferno.
Dangerous. We can't just go invade a country because they're doing something that we think is immoral.
I know. I just think I should be doing something about the rainforest.
It's time to make a difference.
get out of here.
You know what this is? You know what they're doing to us?
That's right. Green Inferno was a film that was supposed to be released in 2014, but the production company that was going to release it kind of had money problems, and then it landed in hell until it was just picked up and given a nation, pretty much a, not necessarily a full nationwide release, but pretty close. And it came out basically end of September. This is his fourth feature film as a director. First Cabin Fever, second Hostel, and third Hostel 2. I guess we could discuss a little bit about Eli Roth's career himself, but I'm sure pretty much most people know the details, and this is more about the film Green Inferno and not about Eli Roth. But either way, Eli Roth is a director from Newton, Massachusetts. He became famous because of the film Cabin Fever. He is known as probably the creator of Torture Porn, which is nothing really new, because a lot of old drive-in and exploitation cinema films had that type of stuff in it way back in the day. But for the modern age, his film, which is Cabin Fever, was the first. It came out in 2002. Those Rob Zombie's House of a Thousand Corpses was supposed to come out probably the same time, but that got lost in hell as well by going from one production company to another, so that came out a year later. So as a result, Eli Roth is known as Torture Porn, or the creator of what people like to call Torture Porn, which means graphic.
Well, was that before or after Saw?
It was before, 2 years before. Saw was 2004.
It was, okay.
Yeah. So he beat out Saw, and he beat out House of a Thousand Corpses by 2 and 1 year, respectively. And that's how I guess a lot of folks would know who he is. He basically writes and directs a lot of his film. He's controversial in the sense that he's very outspoken, in a sense, similar to like Quentin Tarantino and a few others. And as a result, there's quote-unquote hate for him. But a lot of people love him as well because, Mike, you always talk about it, because he like pumps horror and speculative fiction and exploitation films to the point of like in your face, which is a good thing in a sense, right?
Well, I don't think, and I might be wrong because I'm not, I wouldn't say I'm like a devotee, but he's a guy who's making the movies he wants to make. He's a fan of the genre. And if someone doesn't like his movies, I can't disagree. I've enjoyed all of his films to one degree or another, but they've all had weaknesses. I'm not going to say, you know, like Tarantino. Tarantino, I've loved every one of his movies to one degree or another, and I think I can't wait to see Hateful Eight. With Eli Roth, I'm curious to see his next movie, but it wouldn't shock me if it stunk. Where I would be just completely shocked if, you know, Hateful Eight ended up being a horrible movie. But I don't think I've ever heard Eli Roth say anything overtly negative or bad about the genre, about other directors or filmmakers in the genre, not that I remember. He's an unabashed horror fan, and I appreciate him for that, just as I would any other horror fan. He seems like he'd be a cool guy to sit down and shoot the shit with over the horror genre. He just happens to be in a position where a lot of horror fans would like to be, which is being able to make horror movies. And some people don't like the fact that he's very in your face, that he's big on self-promotion, because they feel that's obnoxious, and I can understand that. But, you know, that's how you get your stuff out there. People who I've met directors at these conventions where they just go, yeah, hi, I made a movie, I think it's pretty good. You know, that's not going to get... We say there are people, the movie's been crap, but they're like, oh yeah, it's the most awesome thing ever. You know, it's
What's that guy's name that is at all the conventions in the north?
James Bassalamo.
Yeah. He's a really good guy, and he's like Eli Roth, right? He's a guy that really pumps up not just his film, but genre and exploitation, even crappy stuff. I mean, because they were the guys that loved the 1970s grindhouse crap and say there's actually value here.
Right, and it's, you know, someone who's an unapologetic fan of the genre, someone who takes it seriously but not pretentiously seriously, right? You know, that believes it deserves respect, believes that there's legitimacy to being a fan of it, that are a fan of it, that don't want to be saying, I'm going to use this as my stepping stone to make the film about, you know, struggling poor children in East L.A. You know, it's this is what they like, and it's, you know, and you get guys like Eli Roth and Adam Green and, you know, James Balsamo on a lower scale. But again, that's people get sort of sick of. Sometimes somebody comes along like Eli Roth did, and he had enough friends who had enough websites and things that talked about how awesome Cabin Fever is, or, you know, Hostel, that people just kind of, you know, get sick of him real quick, and they can't wait, and they're just like, oh, fucking hate that guy, I didn't like his movies, I hope it fails. And, you know, I separate the work from the guy in this case. I think, you know, there's a guy who's been around for almost 15 years. You know, you really should have made more than four movies by now.
Yeah, that's right? Great. And I was curious why he hasn't. I have no idea why.
Well, he's produced a lot of stuff, and the best thing he's produced, and probably the best thing I would argue he's touched in his career, is probably The Last Exorcist.
Last Exorcist, yeah, exactly. Yeah. I'm not a huge fan of him, but I have to say that he probably has done more for me than anybody else in horror, at least in the last 6 years, because if it wasn't for him, I would not have gone back to the 1960s, 70s, and 80s exploitation, grindhouse, and drive-in cinema that he loves. The Italian stuff, the giallos, all that stuff. It's not Quentin Tarantino or Robert Rodriguez or Stephen King or anybody that got me interested in those, or at least to go check those films out. It was specifically and only Eli Roth, only because of him. And he did a article on Rotten Tomatoes of the seven horror films that you've never heard of that are awesome. And if you search Eli Roth, best horror films, Rotten Tomatoes, you'll find that article. And all of those films are these totally violent, extreme Italian or European films that I never had heard of, as he said in his article. And so I went off and checked a bunch of them out. I think one of them was The Beyond by Lucio Fulci. Another one was Nightmare City by Umberto Lenzi. Another one was a film called Avanti. I don't even know how to pronounce it. And I picked that one up as well. And I've seen, I think, all of them now. And, it's called Avere Vent'anni by Fernando De Leo. And so I checked all those.
And if Phil can't pronounce it, we're all screwed.
Yeah, forget it. And, I can pronounce Holly's name, one of our listeners. But, the thing is, it wasn't for him, I would have never checked those films out. And then from there, I just went on and on and on. And even though Quentin Tarantino's films are quote unquote more polished and are more faux exploitation, they're more rarely mainstream literary films with exploitation elements. Eli Roth simply jumps right into the exploitation, and that's what he loves, and that's what he wants to do. So whether that pisses people off or not, you know, he doesn't care, and as a result, he has some notoriety because of that.
I think it says everything, without getting into Green Inferno yet, but it says a lot about him that if you sat through the credits for Green Inferno,
yep,
it lists, it says, you know, a list of Italian cannibal films.
Okay. Oh, right. That's cool.
And said, you know, like I said, you know, check out these, like, you know, and of course it uses like Cannibal Ferox and Cannibal Holocaust and all the, you know, it's,
yeah, all the rest.
And you know, and it lists like six or seven. And so, I mean, I've never seen that before in a movie, but it's awesome that he does it, because he's not trying to pretend that, oh, look, this is some new subgenre I've created. No, he's saying, hey, this is the kind of movie I dig, and if you dig this kind of movie, check these out. And so, you know, I think I admit this is maybe my imagination, but I think he'd be perfectly fine if, like, I saw your movie and it sucked, but I'm so glad then I went and checked out, like, Cannibal Holocaust, and that was awesome. I think he would be perfectly fine with people taking that attitude towards his movie if he could turn people on to those other films.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with you, Mike, because he loves promoting these old films and these B-grade directors that have a cult following, and he talks about them and tries to bring them to the mainstream to anybody who will listen, and it doesn't surprise me that he would do that at the end of this film, where he would promote these films and these other directors. He's had these folks, and the guy that directed Cannibal Holocaust, which I think is Deodato Ruggiero, I think his name is, he gets a cameo in Hostel, and so it doesn't, you know, Takashi Miike from Japan, you know, he puts him in Hostel. So he's big fans of these guys, and he wants other people to watch those films. So he's not just promoting himself, he's promoting all his influences and the things that he loves as well.
But I think it's fair to say we're separating the person from their work, right? And we're really here not to discuss him. We're here to discuss...
Yeah, the film Green Inferno, film. Right. Yeah, exactly. Which is the reason we're doing this film is because it's a main release. It's by one of the most important directors in speculative and genre cinema right now, Eli Roth. And it is probably one of the more anticipated horror films for cult fans and genre fans to come out in 2015. So with that stated, let's talk about our opinion of, I guess, Eli Roth first. So Eric, you haven't spoken yet about Eli Roth. What's your opinion of him and his films? I know you have an interesting perspective because you're not a big fan of, I guess, some of these overly violent films, right?
Right. I'm not a big, quote, torture porn fan, and therefore not a big fan of Eli Roth. Okay. And if you want me to give my opinion of the movie, I'll do that now. If not, then I should wait.
All right. Yeah, it's just what here Abe's opinion of Eli Roth. Abe. Okay.
All right. I've only seen two of his work, Hostel and Cabin Fever. Hostel was, I thought it was okay. I mean, it was did make me squirm a few times, but honestly, after all this time has passed, I don't remember much of it as much about it. Cabin Fever stuck with me more because of it's kind of a weird mix of humor and its gross out factor. But I, when going into it, I kind of already understood what the tone was, and I actually kind of enjoyed that a lot more in Hostel. I haven't seen much else of his work. I mean, he seems to have a bit of a filmography here of other things. I didn't really, like a Scream sequel, The Last Exorcism, Inglourious Bastards. But overall, I myself am not, I'm not a big fan of torture porn either. I mean, it's just not my thing. It's okay if other people enjoy it. It just doesn't tick with me as a horror fan.
All right. Very well. So let's go with you first, Mike, about cannibal films. Have you seen any of these films that Green Inferno, I guess, gets its influence from?
Not to the best of my memory, I haven't. And I know I've mentioned in the past I've specifically avoided, although I've been tempted, watching Cannibal Holocaust. But, yeah, I missed out on a whole big chunk of the Italian horror genre, with the exception of Demons, when I was younger. And what little I've sampled, I can appreciate the fans of the genre, but it's just not generally been my thing, because usually they tend to be much more about visuals over story. So I haven't really felt compelled to go watch them, and probably knowing about Cannibal Holocaust has probably steered me away from checking out things like Cannibal Ferox and other similar films, even though they probably don't have the same reason, you know, which is that Cannibal Holocaust actually did use killing of animals specifically for the film. Right. So, and that just doesn't work for me.
Yeah, I've only seen Cannibal Holocaust. That's the only Cannibal film I have seen besides this one we're going to discuss tonight. Yeah, it's unfortunately that one and Pharaoh and a few others use what at the time, I guess, which was deaths of animals in their film. So obviously, as a result, the films have had an odd scenario with the horror community where some folks will just not see it because of that, which is most certainly understandable. Most folks who do see the films will either be, you know, horrified for what they see because a lot of exploitation elements, violence against women, things like that, nudity, basically a torture porn before torture porn was modern. A lot of folks also have looked back and said that some of them are really good films where they have a lot to say about exploitation of first world to third world, things like that. The Italian and European horrors of the 70s, a lot of it is generally drive-in material, and you could argue if it's good or not. Depends on each film, obviously, but generally they do have an odd style, which is more style over plot. I don't really have much experience with the Cannibal films, though I do have seen a lot of the 1970s European horror films recently within the past year, and a lot of them are pretty good. What about you, Eric? Your experience with Cannibal films at all, and after that, maybe the other European films of the 70s that those films are, you know, proud of, I guess.
Nope and nope. Really, the only Cannibal movie I ever watched was Alive.
Alive. Which one's that?
Plane Crash, Soccer Team.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah, I saw that one, too. Yeah.
How do you eat their dead to survive?
That's actually on Netflix right now for free. That's how I watched it about 3 months ago for the first time. What about you, Abe? Your experience with European, Italian horror films of the 70s, as well as anything with the Cannibal films?
I've seen Cannibal Holocaust, actually.
Okay.
It was definitely a visceral film, and with some pretty gut-punch scenes. But, you know, the animal cruelty scenes were actually a little stuck with you because you knew those were real. And it was really it really did bother me more than any of the actual character deaths. And it shocked me that, you know, more than one set of films have done this, you know. But overall, it was definitely a film that I at least felt, as a horror fan, I at least wanted that under my belt to say, like, yes, I've seen the film. Do I like it? I'm kind of in the middle of it. I mean, it's enjoyable, but I don't know if I would go through it twice. Not to say it was way too disturbing. It's just, you know, once you go through it, it doesn't feel like it deserves a second trip. Not to say it was bad. Just I don't feel the need to see it again, but I feel I had to at least see it once. Other Cannibal films, I remember what, I guess Ravenous counts as one as well.
Yeah.
Oh, I've seen that too.
I actually like Ravenous. That was a fun little one. Aside from that, if I have, they're kind of like way in the back of my memory. But, you know, those are the two that kind of come to mind when I think of Cannibal films I've seen.
All right, very good. All right, so I guess we can start and get into our film. Green Inferno. It is an Eli Roth film based off of a release date. I guess it's a 2015 film, similar to like the Mandy Lane film, where it just, you know, got stuck for a couple of years. Interesting, most of the cast is are Chilean actors. Basically, somehow, and I'm not really sure where this comes in, but Eli Roth somehow got into working in Chile, and that's where the film Aftershock that he produced it takes place. And all the actors from there, he basically uses a good, like, 60% of those actors are the stars of this film here, Green Inferno, including one who actually became his wife, where I think he met on the set of Aftershock. So the lead actress of this film here is a Chilean actress, and her name is Lorenza Izzo, and actually is now married to Eli Roth. So that's where the actors come from. So there isn't any big names, you know, U.S. or Canadian or European actors, to my knowledge, besides what I told you folks here. Now, it was written by Eli Roth and Guillermo Amoedo. And if I'm not mistaken, Guillermo Amoedo is also the co-writer of his new film, Knock Knock, that's coming out this weekend as well. And so that's pretty much the folks behind the film. Now, I guess we can go on our thoughts. Let's go with you first, Mike. What was your opinion? Where did you first hear about Green Inferno, and what's your opinion?
It's one of these things that's, again, as I mentioned other films, it's on the horror news sites, you know, and Eli Roth being a name, you know, they mention he's doing this, he's doing that, and so it was there, and, you know, it's been simmering in the background so long, I have no idea where I first heard of it. It was one of my most anticipated films for 2014 before it didn't make it to 2014. You know, and so it's been on my radar because, again, I've liked the films he's actually directed to one degree or another. And as far as this film goes, I liked it. I didn't love it. If somebody wants to say, well, you haven't watched the Italian cannibal horror films, you know, and he's just doing the same thing they did, but it's a pale imitation. Okay, I can't argue that because I haven't seen them. And maybe the others do a much better job of it, but without having seen it, I can only go with what I have in front of me. And I thought it was okay. There were things that I did like about it. I don't know that it knows what it's trying to say at points. I think it has interesting comments to make, but because the issues involved are complicated, I don't know that he can say a lot in a real meaningful way other than, you know, poking fun of certain people. And I kind of like the people that he's poking fun of them, so I could enjoy that, even if there wasn't necessarily a nice, simple message wrapped up in a bow. Now, maybe he wasn't trying to come up with a nice, simple message. Maybe he recognizes that it's complex and just let the commentary stand and wants us to debate them. Or maybe he doesn't have a strong philosophy and just dealt with it in a mature way. I guess that's something to debate. But, you know, the movie had moments that made me cringe in the way he wanted me to cringe. I had a hard time for a lot of the film finding any characters likable. But since I knew that most of them were going to end up on a cannibal plate, that wasn't necessarily a bad thing. Overall, it was an okay film. If this finishes in my top 20, it would probably be closer to the bottom.
Very good. Yeah, I guess I'll go next. Yeah, when I first saw the film, I actually honestly didn't really like the film the first time I saw it. But as the week or 2 weeks going since we've seen the film, originally we were going to do this episode like 2 weeks ago, but due to some issues for everybody to get to see it, we postponed it. And by doing so, reflecting more and more on the film, I actually am beginning to like it a little more. So I'm probably where you stand, Mike. The film as itself wasn't really that scary in a sense. I mean, I there was one scene that was kind of gross. So it didn't affect me as I was hoping, but it didn't have the true throwback of the 1970s cannibal films either. So I could see why people would say that, oh, they did it much better in the 70s, but I wouldn't say that. I would say they just did it differently in the 70s. And so if you were looking for that type of cannibal film, this didn't necessarily have all those elements that people probably were hoping for. But I do like what Eli Roth may have been saying or trying to make fun of. I think the ending could have been better if where the scene in the boardroom and what she does in that scene, the lead character. I think that was unfortunate. and kind of ruined it a little bit for me. And then it would have been even cooler if she had just died, probably. but I do love the very last scene of the film because it's hilarious how what Eli Roth is saying about these people in the film, basically taking a scumbag or a murderer in the case of, say, Che Guevara, and then making them heroes when in reality they're not heroes. They're actually bad people. And I love that ending for the very last scene of the film. But we'll get into some of these things as we go. So my opinion is probably similar to Mike's, but I think I may just be a little more forgiving because of the characters being killed off. It was kind of good because I don't like the characters that much. So, yeah, you know, whatever. What about you, Eric? We'll go with you next.
This movie was fucking awful. It suffered from the only likable character in the movie was a cannibal child. The script was poorly written. There was shoddy camera work in places, bad acting, really poorly placed, ineffective humor, and a stupid ending. Yeah, so I hope Eli Roth eats 5 pounds of kale and washes it down with a bottle of hot sauce so that his ass becomes a green inferno.
How do you really feel?
Oh my God. Hopefully he doesn't listen to this podcast.
And I feel much better now getting that off my chest. I've been waiting for 2 weeks.
Apparently,
I did not
would have been a hell of an improv.
I did not want to see this movie. The only reason I saw this movie is for this podcast.
Right. And I knew this was coming because me and Eric were texting each other 2 weeks ago after we had both seen the film.
I will say that the gore is very well done. We know Eli Roth can do gore. My recommendation would be is if you like gore, go watch Cabin Fever or Hostel again, and skip this one.
Alright, yeah, so it's not, for you, it's not Eli Roth as a director, it's just this film didn't work for you, necessarily.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, alright, very well. What about you, Abe?
I wasn't all that impressed, to be honest. After seeing something like Cannibal Holocaust and, you know, there's several other Campbell films that have probably done a lot more unique things. This doesn't really offer anything new to the genre, or horror for that matter, that other films haven't done before. The gore is done well. It's pretty good. But I felt that sometimes his attempts at humor were kind of juvenile and out of place, which ruined the tension and just felt obnoxious. I think every bit of the acting was terrible, but for the most part, yeah, it wasn't that great. And I didn't really care too much about the characters. I mean, some I felt a little bad for. But I don't know if I even can really recommend anyone going to the theaters to see this, you know? I mean, it's just, you can get a lot more from the older Campbell films, or heck, any other horror film in general, because, you know, there's just nothing fresh here. It's not anything to do with Eli. It's just, I don't think this is a strong film on his filmography. It's just, it's almost like on the border of the Poltergeist review, a remake that's kind of like on the border of being forgettable, but not really so much is terrible. It's just like, I don't think I'm going to remember this film compared to, I don't know, Cabin Fever or any of his other work. I think that for me, at worst, it's a forgettable film. It just doesn't do anything new.
Well, I think something you touch on is that, at least by legend, because again, I never really saw them, the cannibal films tend to be, you know, have the reputation, at least of Western films, as being like the real hardcore films, right?
Yeah.
And he doesn't, there's really just one scene of cannibalism that I can think of, or maybe where there's two.
At least in the two, movie. I remember.
There was two. But, I mean, it just nothing that made me... I mean, yeah, there are moments like the cringe with the eyes and the tongue, but, you know, nothing like I haven't necessarily seen before in other subgenres of the horror genre. Nothing that felt like it was pushing boundaries. The Immature, humor, the out of place humor, that's always been a problem, I think, with Eli Roth. And as much as I like Cabin Fever and as much as I like the first Hostel film, they definitely have moments that just feel completely out of place. Like there's the pancakes moment in Cabin Fever.
Yeah.
And there's the street urchins in Hostel that just don't feel like they should be in the film. And to the point where I'm like, what the fuck was he thinking about putting this thing in there? I don't get it. And maybe there's people who do get it, but I'm just not on the wavelength to get it. And so there was like, really for me, it was just one scene in this film that felt, it didn't need to go there. And there was no purpose to going there. But they went there and it was just to make you uncomfortable through potty humor.
Yeah, it's I don't know. I think that if you cut out those things, the film might be a little stronger. I mean, not by much, but I honestly cringe more at the fact that he put him in there than any of his violent scenes. They're just rather embarrassing.
Well, for this film, yeah, Green Inferno, yeah, there was probably, I guess, two scenes that made people squirm, really, and then the rest, it wasn't really even torture porn or I guess scary in a sense, but it was basically the scene, the eye and tongue and limb scene that you were talking about, Mike, which is basically the first accident death, so not including
right.
the plane, and then the scene where the three girls are brought up to check their the witch woman or cannibal woman or whatever she's called takes this little claw thing and uses it to basically, I'll say it, why not? I mean, that's what it is. Puts it in the vaginas of all three women. I mean, it's off screen in a sense, but you see what's happening, and that kind of makes you cringe too. And besides those two scenes, there wasn't really anything that was horrendously cringy or torture pornish. The scene you're talking about, Mike, about the potty humor, or so, is basically, being in a jungle, that you're going to apt to get dysentery, soldier's disease, diarrhea, whatever you want to call it. And this girl gets one of the girls in the cage, gets it, and all the people go into the corner. And she says, I'm sorry, or whatever. And it's supposed to, I guess you're supposed to be funny. My audience of 13 people, no one laughed. If anything, they felt uncomfortable and thought the scene was disturbing than funny. And I actually rolled my eyes, not because of the potty humor of the girl having dysentery, but simply for the fact that they just saw one of their friends get eaten. I think they wouldn't really, and most people in that situation would understand, okay, someone could have dysentery because they're in a jungle where the water's bad. So I don't think people would have been acting the way they did. Her co-prisoners were all ran away and like, oh my God, that's gross. And I couldn't see people doing that in that situation. If anything, I would think most people would be like, the Deer Hunter, where they're all stuck in the cage and the rats are there and people would feel pity for each other and not like disgust. And so I think was more of a problem than the actual quote unquote potty humor of that scene, in my opinion. Let's get into, a bit, Eric, first off, how many people were in the theater with you and did anybody walk out?
I think there were possibly five other people in the theater with me, and two of them got up and walked out at the really disgusting scene.
Okay, yeah, for me, it was about 13 people, and two of them left, mother and her adult daughter. They left at sometime after the second scene, because I think they were assuming there was going to be a third scene that was bad, but they left at a scene that wasn't disturbing, but it was at that point, I think they just had enough and left.
Which scene, I'm sorry, Eric, which scene did you consider to be the really disgusting scene?
The one where they like pretty much started eating the guy before he was dead.
So the first guy they ate?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Mike, what about you? How many people were in your theater, and did anybody walk out?
I didn't notice anybody walking out. We had two people walk in about halfway through. You know, maybe they heard it took a while to get started. And I would say I'm going to ballpark about 20 people.
Okay.
And this was the second weekend.
Huh. Okay. Did Pam go with you, your wife?
Yeah, she did. Okay. Well, I wasn't counting her. And by the way, she wasn't that thrilled with the film. She didn't dislike it. She thought it was okay. And then she started talking about it and started talking herself into liking it less.
Gotcha.
So, and we've all had that, right? You know, and that didn't make any sense. And I don't like the way that happened. And yeah. You know, one thing I'll give the film makers credit, or not the filmmakers, I guess the studio some credit for, is that they specifically targeted certain theaters. Is that they looked at what theaters have had good showings at horror films in the past. And so rather than do like a 3,000 screen release, they only did like 1,200 screens and aimed specifically at theaters that have drawn a horror audience. So I saw it at an AMC theater, but the AMC theater that's 20 minutes from me didn't have it because I guess that's not a horror theater. Whereas the ones that are an hour away from me are, because they not only had...
Are those the ones close to Rochester or close to New York City?
No, one's in Rockaway, New Jersey, and one is in Nanuet, closer to New York City. And these are also theaters that were showing 10 o'clock showings of Rocky Horror. So that may also say something about the audiences that those theaters draw. You know, and that seems like a smart way to do it for a film like Green Inferno that maybe isn't really appropriate for a wide release, but that horror fans would be interested in checking out. And whatever people think of the film, it more or less made back the money that they wanted. Cause they were hoping for about 4 million the opening weekend. It made 3.9, and they only paid like $1 million to acquire the film. So it certainly made its money back for the studio that picked it up.
Right. What about you, Abe? How many people were in your theater and did anybody walk out?
Just us two spinnies in a dead theater, actually. Like, no one showed up. It was really more fun, actually, because we could snark at the dumber parts of the film.
All right. And I know Chrissy, who was going to join us, she saw it. She was the only person in the theater. But she went during, like, the middle of the week, and it was already the third week of release or something like that. All right.
Now, so, I know two of us. So two of us kind of liked it. Two of us didn't like it. And I'm wondering which are the ones that Christy would be coming on and saying are wrong. Is it, would she be?
Yeah. I don't know. She was going to be quiet like the rest of us and was going to give her views, on this episode without telling anybody in advance. So I'm not sure. But based off of what I think she is going to be closer to probably Abe is my guess. Cause I know she didn't, she's definitely like Eric where she doesn't like that type of film. But I don't know if as a film, whether she thought it was a shitty film, meaning it was terribly made, I don't know. But I know she wouldn't, my guess is she wouldn't have been a big fan of the film. I know obviously Eric despises the film. Abe is like, eh.
Oh, I could tell from the way he was talking last week and from the things he was writing on Facebook, even though he wasn't trying to, I don't think he was trying to tip his hand. There was just, you know, the channeling the power and hatred of Satan through his keyboard was just it was just seeping into every character.
Right. So yeah, I'm thinking Chrissy would be somewhere between Eric and Abe. So not as hateful as Eric, but not as loving as Abe, and Abe really didn't love the film at all. So that's my guess. But we'll hear from her next time she's a guest host. We'll ask her for her 5-minute opinion.
And by the way, I don't actually wish for anything bad to happen to Eli Roth. I just found a way to get back to the title of the movie, so I did.
Right. No.
Search your feelings. You know to be true, Eric.
Yeah. Well, Eric is pretty reasonable. He judges things based off of film by film more than by a director. You're not a fanboy or a fan hater. You're always someone that will just take the film and watch it and then judge it based off of that one film, not by their repertoire or their notoriety.
That's true.
Yeah. So Eric's pretty biased. He's unbiased. He's pretty good.
I tried.
Although
combination of gore porn and cannibalism is a particularly negative twosome for me. I will say that much.
Sure. Yeah, I know that cannibalism really bothers you because it's kind of like freaky.
It conceptually bothers me a lot. I don't like the thought of people eating other people.
Well, see, the thing for me is we've been watching, well, you haven't been, but large portions of America have been watching The Walking Dead for the last 5 years.
Yeah, but Eric made a point on Facebook. There's a difference
between there is a zombie
eating someone and a human being eating someone.
But there is technically a difference, but it's still watching a human being eaten.
It doesn't matter. Eric and me discussed this on Facebook with a few other people in the Our Dark Discussions podcast Facebook group, and we both say that it's a completely different thing to us, because if a zombie's eating someone, it's no different than a monster.
It's a monster. It's like Jaws eating somebody.
Yeah.
But remember,
when somebody's getting eaten, but it's just a monster eating somebody, whereas a human eating another human, that's a conscious choice by a human to consume another human, and that's fucking icky.
Yeah.
But I'm just saying in terms of, like, the makeup involved, in terms of
not the makeup.
And remember when Night of the Living Dead first came out, cannibalism was a big issue because it was, yes, there were zombies or the undead eating people, but they were still on screen people eating people, right? And so that was one of the big taboos, and that's why one of the reasons Night of the Living Dead had a strong reaction from a lot of people, where I think those of us watching it today, we don't see it the same way because, you know, the zombie subgenre is a big thing. And I'm not saying it would necessarily completely obliterate, but I still would have expected it to soften some of the impact. But I don't know. For me, I know they're not really eating the people, so it doesn't really bother me any more than, you know, the shark eating the person or the graboid eating the person.
Like, you know what it is? It's like how when you see on screen, even though you know it's not really happening, someone pulling fingernails or eyeballs or teeth out. Yeah, that bothers you. You've always said that that kind of bothers you more.
Yeah, but it wouldn't matter to me who was pulling out the eyeballs or the fingernails or cutting the Achilles tendon.
I see what you're saying, but to someone like me and Eric, I guess seeing it done by a monster versus seeing it done by a sociopath or people with no feelings, to even whether it's a tribe or whether it's
I think they have a feeling. I think they're feeling hungry.
But you know what I'm saying. So there's a difference. Let's at least give a synopsis of the film. Eric, why don't you do that? You're pretty good at giving.
Oh, I don't know if you want me to do this one.
All right. Then let's let Mike, you want to do it?
All right. So you start with a couple of twats in college. Let me say this. I am of the opinion, and I may be wrong, but I'm of the opinion that, yes, almost every character in this film is unlikable, but I get the feeling that they are supposed to be unlikable, unlike other films.
No doubt about it.
Yeah. Right,
Eli Roth is purposely choosing these characters, and he wants you to not like them.
Right, and it basically, like, doesn't it start out with, you know, someone protesting because the custodians at their college haven't gotten health insurance, and they're going on hunger strike? And, you know, these two college girls that they can't be interested, but, oh, that guy is hot, whatever his name is, the guy who's running it.
Yeah.
And they basically finagle their way into – and he, like, sends the fat guy over to recruit her in because – and so she's like – when she finds out that it's not the fat guy that wants her to be part of this politically active group, it's the really hot guy who sent the fat guy to tell her to be in the group. Now she wants to be in the group.
Right.
And then she shows up and she asks a question, and he thought the question – I don't remember what she asked, but he thought the question was vapid, and he kicks her out of the group. And then so now, of course, when a guy –
we call her something like insolent?
Yeah.
Freshman would say something so insolent.
Yeah, and this guy, you know, he thinks he's all Ricky Ricardo, being hot and Latin and, you know, too smooth, right?
And you know what? It makes no sense because – he's not really that good of a looking guy. We're not talking Brad Pitt here anyway. So
here's I don't
a pretty
know.
he is a pretty good looking girl, and it's like, if this guy doesn't like you, who fucking cares? There's hundreds of other guys that would gladly go out with you that are probably as good looking or better.
Clearly, regardless, you've never met a woman.
What's that?
Yeah. Regardless, everyone has certain things that turn them on. She's just into obnoxious Latin assholes.
Well, you probably that's a fair point. Maybe she's just an idiot. She's an idiot. Yeah, but that's besides the point.
And the whole thing is to me clearly taking shots at the activist subculture,
the progressive liberal college kids who've never experienced the poverty and pretend they have. And so they're vapid scumbags.
Well, it's not that they're vapid scumbags, but they all take up a cause and they get pretentious about the cause. And they ask her, well, what kind of cause do you think? Because she just watches a movie in her class, a video on female genital mutilation, and suddenly she's all about the female genital mutilation. And they talk about the female genital mutilation. They sort of show it, but not show it. It doesn't go all Antichrist on you. Right. But it's that sort of thing where, you know, it's like a documentary footage of female genital. So enough that you get the point. And, you know, this is actually where you could talk. We've talked about Chekhov's gun. So this is for the first time Chekhov's female genital mutilation, right? You know, so you know this is going to come up later in the movie. But, you know, I'm not really caring about the people I'm saving. I'm interested in the hot guy. Everybody's got a motive. They're doing everything for the wrong reasons, and they're all shallow and vapid.
Yep.
A lot of young people are now, because young people, it's whatever the thing that happens that moment, they get passionate about. But these are, and some of them really are. There are young people who really are dedicated to causes and beliefs and all that.
But Mike, you said those people. In a prior episode, I think last episode, you go, oh, yeah, but those people just, if they want to hate life and hate themselves so much, who cares? That's their problem.
But right. These are the people who, these are like the 1%, not the 1%ers, the Occupy Wall Street crowd who is protesting capitalism and protesting big business while they're sitting there on their iPads.
Right. Yeah.
You know, it's like, and then not understanding the irony and complaining because they didn't have a cable to charge while they were out on the streets.
Right.
So they go across the street to Starbucks, get their coffee, and plug in there for a little bit.
Right, and it's not that, you know, it's not that I don't believe in causes, I don't believe in channel. I've pushed Scares of Care on here because I think they can do good work. But like the other day, and I don't want to talk about the issue itself because I don't want to get in the politics of it. But you know, I'm driving to the store and the town for like must have been for you know. Three or four blocks is there's people protesting abortion, just standing there with signs, you know, saying that they don't like abortion. It's like, okay, that's great. That's what you feel. Who do you think you're affecting by this? You know, you're just standing there to say, I have free time on my hands. You know, certainly there are more productive things you could do than stand on the side of the road for a few hours holding a sign if this is the cause that you've chosen to embrace. And it's not like there was, and it's all strip mall, so it's not like they were standing in front of an abortion clinic or anything. It was just, we don't like abortion. Okay. Thanks for the information. I really didn't care what your opinion on abortion was. Thanks for letting me know.
Yeah.
I appreciate it. You're not changing my opinion on abortion. Fuck off. Yeah. Well, it's not even fuck off. It's like, there could have been people standing there with, you know, pro-choice signs. And I would have been.
It doesn't matter. Yeah.
Doesn't matter. Off. I've got my opinion. I feel strongly about my opinion. But I also know people feel differently. And it's a sensitive issue. And I don't see any need to fly the flag. But, you know, there are more productive things you can be doing than just, you know, we're going on a hunger strike. It's about me. Look how much I care. Right.
Right.
And I thought there was a really good thing that came up later in the film. But anyway, so they go down there and, you know, they meet the guy who's funding. So they go down to Central America.
Yeah, because Peru.
South America.
My guess is they chose Peru because most of the actors are Chilean, and Chile and Peru, they don't get along too well. So let's use Peru as the bad guy. But anyway, go on.
Okay, so they're going to save an Amazon tribe that's never come in contact with civilization before. And the bulldozers are like 90 seconds away from wrecking their existence of running around without iPads.
I've enjoyed Mike's summary of the movie.
And, you know, but this is all because this is making fun of these are all these cause celeb things, right? And yeah. So they said, we're just going to go down for the weekend. And, of course, lead character girl, her daddy works for the UN, of course.
Of course.
And he's like, oh, I don't know. It doesn't sound like a good idea. So, oh, daddy, we'll be bound and back in no time. So she goes down, leaving her other twatty girlfriend behind.
Oh, I couldn't stand that character, even though
I wasn't fun. Was, but again, yeah. You're not. I don't ever get the sense that you were the supposed to be interested in any of these people. There were like two characters that were minor that I kind of liked, sort of. And like I said, there was the fat guy who
was a serious twat.
Yeah, but she was. Yeah. So they fly down there. They meet the clearly obvious drug dealer, or you know, whatever, who's funding this. To get them down there.
Who's our benefactor?
Who's their benefactor?
Well, we find out that he's not really a drug dealer. What he is he works for a rival company that wants
to... Yeah, he works for a rival company. Yeah. But, yeah, so you just... It's racist to assume he's a drug dealer just because he's rich and fat. And he has... And he was clearly just eating powdered donuts. I don't know. But... And so they go to the site. They sneak in dressed up as, you know, the workers. And, of course, there are guys with guns there. To protect the workers. They go there, they chain themselves to the tree. Our lead twat has her lock to chain herself to the tree doesn't work. And we find out later that it's
set up that way intentionally.
Right, so that which also felt like make no sense to me because they're going trying to put the guns to the head of the people and they finally find one that's not chained to the tree, and so they pull our lead twat out, put a gun to her head. It's like, you can't put your gun to the head of a person because they're chained to a tree?
I know. It doesn't make sense, honestly. That didn't make,
and she realizes she's been saying, and they're like, oh, you know, and they're holding up their cell phones going, we're protesting! We're recording you doing something naughty! And they're like, oh, shucks, the world has rebelled! And we have been told to stop. And this is, you know, okay, this is the sort of stupid stuff that I guess could happen on social media. I'm not necessarily going to, because I don't spend enough time on that sort of social media to know if that something like that was plausible or not. And I'm like, okay, so they stop developing. And they are flying home. And everybody's happy because we made a difference. We stopped them from destroying this tribe. And she's all pissy because hot Latin guy betrayed her and used her. You know, and then of course we find out that hot Latin guy is in the employ of the rival company and they're the ones that are going to get to destroy the land and destroy the tribe. And as we realize that, the plane crashes and a bunch of people die in some sort of interesting ways. One guy vomits onto his face, which having seen the visit a couple of days before was only the second worst thing I'd seen in somebody's face in recent films.
I think another guy actually walks
into by the way, did anybody else notice that they show the plane flying like, oh, at treetop level and somehow it takes it like 5 minutes to get down to the ground?
I've noticed that, yeah.
Okay. Go ahead, Mike.
No. And so then the plane crashes. Some of them survive. Some of them don't. And they get captured by these. Oh, then they're looking for the. Can we get the GPS device? Can we get the phone? And they get captured by the natives. The natives drag them off to their village. And they pick one guy. I don't remember why they picked. It was the fat guy, right?
Yep.
The fat guy. Yep.
Oh, okay, so now I know why. Because it was the fat guy. They picked the fat guy. It would be me. Put the fat guy. They put him out, and the yellow witchy woman comes out. I think they call her the elder.
The elder, yeah.
Right. She comes out and she does ritualistic stuff and basically plucks out his eyes, cuts out his tongue. They chop off his arms and legs, and then they stick him in the smoker, you know, and feed the village for several days, whatever. Right. While the rest of them are stuck in this cage that looked like it was left over from one of the old Planet of the Apes movies. The one girl gets dysentery and shits herself.
Yeah.
And, you know, and let me say about that. I always, as a biology guy, that always is a thing in my, like, when they have, like, the guy's been trapped in the box for days. That's always something that's there on my brain, like, has been holding it the whole time. You know, when, I mean, you got to go at some point.
Right.
But so I don't necessarily mind that they address the fact that these characters are locked in a cage and you might have to take a dump. But it's the way it's played. It's just, yeah, it's not, oh, I'm sick and I got it. The only thing I could say that I liked about the scene is that they have the villagers doing the waving at their nose because she made a stinky.
Right.
You know, which sort of humanizes those characters. It's like, yes, they're primitives, they're quote-unquote savages. Well, actually, no, they are savages because they're fucking cannibals. but they're still human, and they find humor in potty humor, you know, and shit smells too. So I kind of get that, but it still just didn't play out well. I didn't care for that. Then someone, oh, we mentioned Chekhov's female genital mutilation. Chekhov's pot comes into play. Because one character was given some really good pot by our wealthy benefactor. And so when they, oh, right, the one girl kills herself when she realized what's going to happen.
Well, yeah.
Because no, she ate her girlfriend.
Right, and so they basically stuff, you know, the pot down her throat so that when they cook her, the whole village gets high and one guy.
At least to perhaps the worst line in movie history.
Which is that?
They got the munchies.
Oh my god, they've got the munchies!
That was so bad. That took me right out of the moment because it's like, no one in their right mind would say that when they're about to be eaten alive by fucking cannibals.
So he gets up. He manages to somehow. It's not hard to get out of this Charlton Heston cage, and you know, so he gets out and he starts. But of course, they're surrounded. Every time they try to get up, they get hit with a poison dart and get knocked out.
And that's actually, I was glad they addressed that because I was sitting there the whole time thinking, why don't they just at least fucking try to break out of this stupid bamboo cage? But yeah, there's people with poison darts, so that is a motivation to stay in the cage.
Right. So one guy gets stuck with a poison dart. So they get all high. One guy jumps out to try to run for it. And at this point, the villagers become peckish because they've got the munchies and they tear him apart without the normal prep that they did before. And basically eat him alive. So that's our worst cannibal thing there. Some of the other characters, is it in the same scene? Is this right after this? They try to make a break for it?
Actually, it was right before that. What happens is they try to make a break for it. Our leader, activist, who's a scumbag, holds back this guy here by holding like a dart that was shot earlier. That
oh, missed, right, right, right. Okay.
And he stabs him with the dart, so he passes out, so he can't escape. So the two girls run, but
right, and in his mind, right, he's thinking, well, there's going to be a rescue plane coming along any day now because my people are coming through to bulldoze this village. Any day now. And they're figuring, like, they eat one person a day. So he doesn't really want them to escape because he figures it's less of a risk to just sit there and wait for help to arrive,
More people in the cage, less chance he's going to be eaten.
Right. So, oh, and by the way, they mentioned they do the check up the twat with the elder and discover naturally that our lead twat is a virgin. And right. Therefore, she's going to be a special bride for Kong or whatever. We don't really ever find out.
That, they don't explain that very well, what they're prepping for.
You get an idea. She's going to be probably, be you know...
A new bride to one of the tribe members.
What I read in reviews and stuff afterwards was that, yeah, they make her, like, the bride to Kong. But what they were going to do was give her a female genitalia chop-off.
Right, yeah. but I think sort of along the way probably to eventually marry her off to somebody.
Yeah, they wouldn't do that if they were just going to eat her afterwards.
Right.
Right. And then was it so then they, is it that they recapture them and then that's when they do the female genital mutilation thing?
Yeah, and then they smear, I think it's guacamole over some guy and make ants eat him or something.
So they try to do that, but, and this is a thing, you know, it's not that I wanted to see female genital mutilation, but you kind of promised it at the beginning of the movie. And I'm all set there to be really uncomfortable and grossed out by watching them do either by showing or implying female genital mutilation about this girl. Yeah, she's a bit of a stupid teenager twat, but, you know, you didn't want, that's, you don't want to go there. You don't. That's just, even for her, a shallow, vapid girl who had a crush on an asshole, you don't want to go there. But then they didn't go there. I'm like, they did the whole, oh, something distracted the villagers, and now they're going to, you know, the stormtroopers are running off and leaving our prisoner unguarded. You know, it's like,
how convenient.
You know, so you didn't fire Chekhov's, you didn't fire Chekhov's female genital mutilation. So one of the guys tries to escape, and he's punished for escaping because they tie him up. They break basically all of his limbs.
Yep.
And then they smear him with
the guacamole. With,
I don't know, honey, with guacamole the guacamole that the CGI ants apparently really like.
Those ants are terrible. Hot sauce.
And so the CGI ants come up and start biting him and stinging him and he's screaming. And to me, it wasn't very convincing CGI. I've certainly seen worse.
Yeah, Indiana Jones and. The crystal skull.
Yeah, but it wasn't really convincing. And they're like inch and a half long. They're like massive ants, you know. And I don't think that's necessary. We all have issues, you know. I think we've all dealt with ants. Normal size ants crawling on us would be enough to make us, I think,
yeah,
have issues. And in fact, I would argue that because they were larger ants, and I'm looking at them, I didn't see them biting or stinging. You know, so I don't know what he was screaming about, other than, oh my god, there's large ants on me. Whereas if they were smaller, it would be harder for me to discern that there wasn't anything
going on.
But I guess real ants, there are bigger issues. You know, and she finds him all strung up and he's like, oh,
they
kill me,
other
kill
stuff
me.
To him too, don't they? They like break,
they
all
break his limbs,
shit, don't they?
Yeah, they break all of his limbs. They gave him, and there's one guy who's the headhunter, who's, you know, the big yellow guy that with the bones through his nose that you've probably seen in some of the advertising.
Yeah, it's on posters.
Right. And now I'm blanking on how exactly she ends up. Oh, right. So what happens is you finally get to the point where the bulldozers start up. They're coming close enough. They're picking up back where they left off a couple of days ago. And the villagers all go off to fight their fight against the guys with the guns. And this is when the girl escapes.
With the help
of... She makes it there.
Yeah.
Right. With the help of the one... Because she has the little flute necklace that she got.
Another Chekhov's
flute.
That's so fucking stupid.
Chekhov's flute necklace. Chekhov was really busy in this movie. There was Chekhov's flute.
Well, and of course it actually plays.
Chekhov's flute. Chekhov's pot. Right, and she plays, and she's charmed this cannibal child with this little trinket, you know, which we've seen a million times before. And so for that reason, cannibal child lets her go. She makes it there. She finds a cell phone that's dead. But she basically bluffs her way in holding it up to stop the guys from shooting.
I'm filming.
Yeah, I'm filming. And they go, oh, I don't want to be caught being an asshole on camera because God knows here in Peru that would be frowned upon. and then she throws the camera on the ground to smash it so they can't tell if it was recording or not. And basically the villagers get away and they drag her off and she's been saved. But of course, asshole is still in the village because he didn't want to escape. And she goes home, she talks to her daddy, and about all the horrible things that happened to her, but the villagers were wonderful. And the only thing I could get is that while they tried to give her a clitorectomy, apparently that was not as bad as being the Latin asshole. And so she would rather not have anybody go save the Latin asshole and continue to have this tribe of savage cannibal people.
not yeah, be punished. I really didn't understand her motivation there.
I think it had to do with the fact that she didn't want the deaths of the other people involved to be in vain. Because it turns out they were all being played by the asshole. They were all pawns in the plan for the business.
But it still doesn't make any sense, because whether or not they were played or not, they were still killed by the cannibals.
In the end, she didn't want all their... Right, but she didn't want their sacrifices to be in vain, technically. Because otherwise... Well,
but also, what she's doing is screwing the company over.
That's another thing, too,
right?
Yeah.
She's screwing over... Right, she's screwing over the company that basically got all of her friends killed by putting them in danger, you know, in all this in the first place, right? They got her set up with a gun to her head.
Okay, that makes more sense, yeah.
Right, but again, I don't think it's all that clear, because I don't think anybody gave a shit about that storyline. Right?
No.
We just want, and we all know, we're checking in, we're sitting down, we're just like, where are the cannibals? Where are the cannibals? We don't know. Yeah, I know, rich Latin asshole dude, we don't care. We don't care. We don't care about the pot. We don't cannibals. I want some eyeballs eaten. Come on. And then she has like the little nightmare dream where the headhunter comes for her. But finally they get like a satellite image where you see rich Latin asshole has somehow incorporated himself into their society. It looked like,
which is bullshit.
Yeah, it was asshole.
I'm going to touch on that, because this is something I missed and I read somewhere somebody picked this up. And it sounded like which is that the headhunter, if you looked at the headhunter, he was played by an actual actor. He was actually much bigger and taller than everyone else there. And he was saying that as a viewer, he just felt like this was a guy who had a backstory where he was somebody who was taken from another tribe or taken elsewhere and wasn't actually one of the villagers. Now, okay. if that's it's poorly communicated if that's the case. But right. Then that might make sense as to what was going on with Rich Latin Asshole, is that he kind of maybe becomes the new headhunter. But he's stuck in the middle of fucking backwoods of Peru. He's not making his way back to Sacramento or wherever the hell this was to track down, you know, the college girl who left him behind when it was his frickin' choice to stay behind in the first place.
Well,
so I don't really understand.
Actually, that was a mistake, Mike, because you remember he says, "Let me out, save me," and she leaves him.
Oh, yeah, okay. But it's still, this is not a movie that should be set up for a sequel. Yeah.
Right.
Right. I don't think anybody wanted. Yeah, I don't think this is a movie that anybody, even if you enjoyed the film, I don't know that this is a story you wanted to see them go down. So it seemed like a lame ending to tag on.
Green Inferno year.
Right. Yeah, so that's. Yeah, so I mean, I do think they're getting at some things. I think it's maybe a mixed message. They're making fun of the activists, but it's also like you get there, and who is it that's doing the female genital mutilation? It's the women of the tribe, right? Now, I'm of the opinion that female genital mutilation is a really, really horrible thing.
Yes,
but at the same time. Yeah. I'm the rich white asshole living in a first world country who's looking down at these other people and their ways. So you sort of get this two thing, because we're all told, well, don't be judgmental. Well, it's easy to say, well, don't be judgmental about the other culture until, of course, they want to be the one to mutilate your genitals. You know, so it's weird. On the one hand, it's the, you know, making fun of the people for trying to preserve a culture. But then, is this a culture that we really want to be preserved? But then, aren't we being judgmental by saying that they're a culture of genital mutilating cannibals?
Exactly.
Right, and this is where you get to the whole multiculturalism, you know, question, and where you get people talk about.
But I thrive on being judgmental.
It's about everything, Mike. Right? It's like, do we have a right to tell Peru they can't chop trees down and build buildings? Because that's what we did here in Europe.
Well, there's that, but
you know, never mind. Like you said, the genitalia mutilation, whether it's males getting their circumcisions or whatever, or this terrible thing about females, do we have a right to say you can't do that because we think it's savage, because we're in a different, you know, world, in a sense? Just as do we have a right to tell Muslims or Jews or Hindus how to live their life? We have no right to tell anybody to do anything. So... whether we look at it and say it's horrendous, though, you know, they don't think so. I mean, you, You know what I'm saying? I'm sure there's some that do, but why we can't force them to live the way we want.
To go uber nerd on you, I mean, this is the whole, you know, Star Trek Prime Directive thing. And, you know, it's like you're not supposed to interfere with other cultures. But every now and then, don't you just come across a culture where you're like, you know what, maybe we ought to frickin' interfere because this is just absurd.
No doubt. You're right. But there is a lot of cultures that are absurd. But that doesn't mean they're going to listen to us. Right. I mean, tribalism. Well, you know, you'll have.
Oh no, there's not. And it's just like.
Well, and that's why we invented weapons of mass destruction.
which is a whole other issue.
And that's why. Russia's doing the bomb in Syria right now. But anyway, go on.
But I think this is where you get to the whole. It's complicated, right? I mean, you can't just go in and say, you know, you're gonna. You can't. We can't go in and change a culture completely. On the other hand, you know, we don't think it's a good idea to let's say in these countries where women aren't allowed, you know, to learn to be reading or writing and can be stoned to death because they got raped. I don't think anybody who considers themselves, in Western culture thinks, that's just their way. You know, nobody would dismiss it as that. So it's a, like a lot of things, it's a tough issue. And I think, maybe you can make an argument that might be what they're arguing with, because those protest people do oversimplify every frickin' thing, right? And, well, do we – yeah, oh, we should let this tribe, how wonderful it is for this tribe that it has never come in contact with the modern world, and they're pure and they're eco-friendly because they wipe their asses with eucalyptus leaves. On the other hand, they also don't have access to modern medicine, you know, modern hygiene. They don't, you know, they're going to live short lives, and they're freaking cannibals. You know, do we say, well, because we value the Aboriginal peoples, therefore we're not going to give them the option to have a healthcare plan? You know, where does it go? Because let's be honest, once you come into contact.
What about Obamacare? Yeah. Doesn't take care of that?
Oh, God, stop. Stop bringing your politics.
What I'm saying is, I mean, you do have a problem because that's the truth of the matter. It's like, whatever you want to say, like, say about, when Europeans came into North America, once the contact happened, it happened. And it wasn't going away.
And South America.
And South, well, right, to the Americas, I should have said. And most of the damage was done by plague, right? By influenza and other diseases wiped out 95% of the population.
That's correct.
When our culture comes into contact with another, we're going to change it. Once they see, an iWatch, their minds are blown. And it's, they may not know what to do with it. They probably don't have any chargers, but it's something that can't be undone. So something can only be pristine up to a point, and then it's, you know, we can't go and just see, once you start trading with them, once you start dealing with them in the outside world, you can't close that door. So you understand, on the one hand, yeah, you know, it's a pure culture, and for anthropological reasons, it's really freaking fascinating. But notice, people around the world seem to want to steal from other cultures. They want to buy their best shit. They want to take their technology. They want their, you know, their entertainment and their music and their clothes and the other things. I mean, 200 years ago, if you went to Japan, you would not have seen somebody dressed up like George Washington. Nowadays, no matter where you go in the world, if you're involved in business, you're going to see somebody in a suit and a tie. Right? That sort of cultural diffusion constantly happens. And so it's weird to say, like, oh, we should force these people to never come in contact with our world so they can stay special and pure. But we're also denying them the opportunity to have a say of whether or not they want to live in a modern world. And let's be honest, most of us want to live in a modern world because being a friggin' savage primitive tribe sucks. You have a short life. You work your ass off.
Some scalpels got to speed up the genital mutilation.
Right.
They don't even have good tools.
Crappy teeth.
They don't even have the good tools. You're right, Eric.
Right. I mean,
they're using and stones instead of knives.
I wouldn't want anybody with a blade near my junk, but if they were, I'd want it to be made of steel, not bone. Thank you very much.
Right. And are we going to let, can you say, well, it's a cultural issue whether or not women are real people? I mean, is that a cultural thing? All right, can we say there? Well, that's their right. It's their right to treat women like shit because it's a different culture and we'll never understand. Don't be judging them. Sometimes you judge. Call me an asshole, and a judgmental asshole if you want. I think there are times we have to judge.
Well, Mike, I'm
just saying. The other day, I'm reading an article about women protesting because they have to shave their fucking legs. Because they were from a darker race or they have hair and therefore they have darker hair on their skin. Not even like black. They just have, because they have darker hair, they have to shave more often than those blonde bitches. And that's some sort of form of female oppression.
Dude, and these are, and then you have the.
Can
the
we same, please compare right, that right, shit to female right, genital right. mutilation?
All right, and then you have the same protesters saying that it's the right of every woman to be a sexual object in Times Square and show their boobs. It's a right. So, well, it's all contradictory.
But it's contradictory because the issues are complex. Well, why can't a woman show off her tits in public? I don't mind.
Well, that's children, cool. Mike.
The children.
The children were just snacking on these things a couple of years earlier. But society at the same time has the right to set its standards. And again, you get into this whole thing where the simple answer is it's really freaking complicated.
Right. And Mike, you're just talking and you're just talking about that stuff. I mean, you can go on to the next level, which I brought up earlier, which is we have no right to tell Peru or Brazil or Indonesia or Papua New Guinea that they can't chop down trees and sell and make money. We have no right to do that. Even if you could argue it's terrible because it's damaging the environment and animals and tribes and whatnot. Well, I mean, if that's the way they're going to make money, they got to do what they got to do, right?
But then there's people who say, but we're all connected, and therefore what they do will affect my life. If they chop down their trees, I won't have oxygen to breathe, so I can tell them not to chop down their trees.
But that's right. Those people are idiots because those are the same people that have their TV and are eating the steak they're eating veggie foods and they're having a good life, going out Friday night with whoever, while the people down in wherever that are trying to chop these trees are living poor and they have to make a living and they need money too and they need a life and a better standard of living. And so as long as my standard of living is not affected, they shouldn't be able to do any of their terrible things and blah, blah, blah.
Well, it's like Cecil the Lion, right? Cecil the Lion, everyone gets it up in arms because a dentist killed Cecil the Lion, right, in Africa. It pays a shitload of money to do it, which helps feed the village. Before they started doing this legally, they were basically being paid a lot less to cover up for the poachers. And in a lot of places, I'm not a hunter. I would never want to go out and shoot a lion. But I also don't live in a village where lions could be eating my children. And lions attacks are a legitimate issue. They are dangerous animals. But in a lot of places where they have legalized the hunting of lions and let villages rent out the things, they've made a shitload of money and protected the lions from poachers, and the lion populations have recovered because they let them shoot 5 lions a year, whatever it is, and get a shitload of money for that. It sucks to be the lion, right? But we want to be all judgmental and shit about Cecil.
No, that's fair. That's fair because again, these are very complicated issues. You're absolutely right. It's like, and again, what if, because we're getting mixed reactions even in that story because you have to. The stories are saying that the government funds this and it was illegal and whatever. And then the other half are saying it wasn't legal. And again, it's all complicated issues. And who but they, right. Who but they? Yeah, I mean, do we have a right to say?
Oh, but that was just one example. I've seen people do this all the time. Of, oh, look at this woman who shot a giraffe. She paid all this money to shoot a giraffe. Well, okay, I don't necessarily agree with it. I wouldn't have done it. But there are reasons why. Again, there are reasons why some places take that approach to conservation of renting out the right to hunt animals, because that money goes to protect a lot of the other animals that are there.
And besides dress,
you know, and the reason is we have to do that. Well, and the reason they have to do that is because you have the poachers who are massive assholes who break the law and they don't give a shit that they just made the white rhino extinct.
Right.
Right? I mean,
yeah.
Or de facto. Yeah. There's still some left, but they're way past the getting it upstage.
Right. Right. Well, yeah. I mean, dude, there's so many stupid protests. I remember I was at some big event, and of course they had to have the hippies had to have their pot table, and you know, legalized marijuana, and I'm talking to them and they go, marijuana is a great thing, you can make paper with it, you can do that, and I'm thinking the U.S. Constitution is made out of hemp paper, you know, and on and on, and it's like, dude, why don't you just admit the only reason you want it legal, it has nothing to do with fucking paper. It's because you just want to get high. You know, you're throwing these red herrings out. And then on the right side
of the
poll, like, you get the hunters that say, oh, we hunting's great because it thins the population. Otherwise, all the animals would just starve to death because there'd be too many of them. It's like, okay, that may be true, but why don't you just admit you just like hunting? Don't make these bullshit red herring arguments.
Yeah. You try to justify it, but they do.
Yeah, just say the fact. I want to get high and I want to shoot animals. That's it. You know? So, I mean,
I get, you're right. And I've gotten that with kids. It's like, well, I'm in favor of medical marijuana. It's like, do you have glaucoma? No, you don't. You know, you're not getting any. You know that if they legalize marijuana tomorrow, you're still fucking 14 years old. You're not getting any because you can't get cigarettes. You can't get drink. They're not going to be handing you the weed. That's not going to happen.
Right.
You know, it's like, but you're right. It's just not. Yeah, not honest.
Exactly. They're all of them. A lot of these protesters, a lot of these whatever, it's not honest. I mean, you know, you have the famous actors and actresses that will do the PETA thing, and then the next day they're wearing the fur coat, you know, and it's just all hip.
What they're doing is they're pretty much acting, they're doing what that makes them feel good about themselves. They don't really care about the cause. They're just trying to, you know, feed their own ego. And I'm like, oh, look at me. I'm such a great person. I actually support this cause.
Oh, yeah. And that's
the whole point of the characters at the beginning, is they're there because it makes them feel good.
And that's,
we made a difference. Yay!
Whether you like this film or not, that the last scene of the film I love, because basically what happens is she looks out the window and she sees all the kids protesting again, you know, the new group. And they're all wearing a T-shirt of the scumbag of the original group, and it looks like a Che Guevara T-shirt. And I just laugh my ass off because anytime I see people wearing Che Guevara T-shirts or have posters of Che Guevara, it makes me absolutely sick because he was quote unquote for the people, the poor people, the whatever. And in reality, he that may in somewhat ways be true, but he killed thousands. Hundreds of people. He was a scumbag, Che Guevara, and they make him this hero. And then to see this at the end, where they
be a hero without killing hundreds of people.
I know. And that's what Eli Roth
is
trying to make a point here, which is people are so stupid they make heroes of these evil losers.
I think you could appreciate the point that he's trying to make without necessarily thinking he made it well or did it with a good movie. You know, and just like I've had lots of movies where that I really enjoyed the movie but disagreed with the plot point. And I do have, I just want to point, I basically have a Che Guevara T-shirt, except instead of Che Guevara, it's Caesar. It's Caesar from Planet of the Apes. So.
Oh, all right.
It's the same thing. And people are like, oh, and they're like, oh, wait a minute. Yeah, it's your ape overlord, dude.
I dated this girl once and went over there and she had a cat named Shay. And at the time, Shay Hillenbrand used to play for the Red Sox. So I go, oh, your cat's named after Shay Hillenbrand. She goes, oh, no, it's named after Che Guevara. And I go, come again? And she goes, Che Guevara. I go, the communist? The murderer? And she goes, oh, well, my daughter was the one that named the cat. And I'm thinking, oh, my God, her daughter. And it's like, I didn't even know she had a daughter because a teenage daughter.
And this is my bulldog, Stalin.
And then I'm thinking, and I'm going, if she was going to name her cat after a quote-unquote hero of the people, why didn't she name him John Steinbeck or something? Why the fuck would you – or William Faulkner or Gandhi or something. Why would you name it Che Guevara? Are you fucking stupid? And believe me, that was the last date I ever had with that chick. I was gone. I was done. Can't do it. Anybody that names their cat after a commie rat, I'm out of there and never going to go back.
The next girl he dated had like a cat named Hitler.
That's basically how I took it. She named her cat Hitler. It's the Che Guevara and Hitler, the same thing. The same thing.
Not quite.
I won't go quite that far.
We're not going to let you get away with that one, Phil. Sorry.
Well, you know what I'm talking about.
Che Guevara and Hitler.
And it was only because he didn't have the power of a country. If he did, he probably would have done the same. Stalin did.
But he didn't get the. Well, Stalin did, and if you want to say there's not a big difference between Stalin and right, I would say that you got that with a lot of these people. Once you get to power, there isn't a big difference between them and Hitler. The difference with Hitler is that Hitler took over a first world nation with a large industrial complex and could really, you know, mechanize his tyranny. You know, whereas let's say Pol Pot didn't quite have that advantage, and therefore couldn't.
But either way, it's they're all evil bastards. Is my point. So what?
Phil, I live near Bethel Woods, which is the site of Woodstock.
Okay.
It's about an hour from here.
Yep.
And I get no short perverse pleasure from going to see a concert at Woodstock and seeing how commercialized the hippies have become.
Okay. Yep.
Right, because you go there and they're selling the Coca-Cola. Remember, this is Woodstock. There was 90 million people and two porta potties.
Yep.
And now you go there and you can buy your Coke or your Pepsi or whoever the sponsor is in a tie-dyed plastic cup.
Yep.
Right. You know, it's all that says. You know, it's all this stuff. It's like, and you can buy the T-shirt too. You know, it's all. And so it's, and I laugh at that because it's, you know, all of those ideals eventually kind of go away. You know, as we try to pretend, look, you were there to get high, have sex, and listen to some good music. Can we not overestimate what its importance was? You know, it may have been a significant culture event, but it wasn't like, you know, it didn't really change anything. Not really. Didn't feed anybody except some brown acid. Didn't really, you know, cut off the chains from anybody. Those are the people marching in the streets that did that. You know, it's in some cases people literally with guns pointed in their face. You sat there, got high in the rain and the mud, and that's fine. And listened to some good tunes fairly crappy speakers.
Yeah, back to the movie.
Right, anyhow,
basically the movie you could argue is Eli Roth was making a commentary on laughing at these. Boobs, and that's what they are, and it was
on these
and was joyfully in glee watching them all get eaten, even though one survived at the end. But in real life, that actress is his wife, so I can understand why she didn't die. But you know what I'm saying. So
otherwise, you had that argument. Yeah, you killed me in the movie.
So
you cut off my clitty. What did you do?
So So there was a mixed reaction or answers or points that he was trying to make at the end where she is in the boardroom and whatnot. But generally, besides that, I guess, odd left turn there, the film was basically just laughing at these pretentious young people. Is really what it comes down
to. And I think, like I said, I think the film offers some things to chew on. I think it does some things well. I don't think it does enough things well that I would go, oh, you got to see this movie. You know, it's worth checking out, in my opinion, not in Eric's opinion. It's worth checking out. But, you know, it's not anything worth getting excited over. It's still better than a lot of the movies that I've had to watch in theaters because it's the only ones that have been in theaters. But, you know, we'll see. It made some money. Hopefully more films will follow suit.
Yep. Absolutely.
Except they'll be good.
So I think anybody want to make final thoughts? I mean, I think everybody knows where everybody stands, and
I think
we talked.
I made myself perfectly clear.
Yeah, and I think we pretty much.
I mean,
the plot of the film, really, cannibal or not, it was really more of a commentary of laughing at these bozo 20-something people, pretentious idiots. But Abe, you were gonna say something?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, if it's not going to be in the theaters much longer, and if people really want to see it, I would say, you know, try Amazon Video or something like that when it comes on there. Decide whether or not they want to actually own it. I mean, because it's going to either attract or just repel certain people. It's kind of a movie that's kind of up in the air. I mean, I think we're pretty much right now we're a house divided on this film. You know, it's kind of on a sliding scale of like to dislike. So I would say for anyone interested in The Green Inferno, I mean, you're not really missing, in my opinion, anything special. I mean, I think Eli has done much better films in his past, and I'm sure he'll have opportunities to do better and down the road. But, you know, I mean, if you like Campbell films, you know, there are the classics still available, but if you want to try this for a starter and see how, because I mean, I think it's a good starter level for it. Because the other ones are a little more hardcore, I would say it's kind of start with this and, you know, see what you think. I mean, I don't know if I would say it's a movie you have to own, but that's just me.
I want to say what Mike pretty much said, which was the film is really more a commentary on numerous things like, do we have a right to tell certain cultures things, and the pretentious idiots and how they're misplaced what they are trying to do. So that was interesting concepts that Eli Roth put into the film, I thought, which is what gives it some merit and some importance.
As I said, it was an okay movie. I won't say it's disappointing because I wasn't necessarily expecting a whole lot by this point. You know, and we've kind of covered it. It's if you wanted to, you know, it's I don't think he says anything so profound that it's, oh, you know, you got to catch it. It's got moments, maybe not enough, and certainly I think could have been better. I'm curious if this was, you know, an original edit or if there's stuff that they had to take out to get into theaters. And if so, I don't know if that'd be enough to.
I think I read something make it a that better they did movie. Not have to edit the movie to get an R.
Yeah, if they do and there is a director's cut, I bet you it won't be much of a difference. Maybe, you know, like 5 minutes more, like, say, Drag Me to Hell was or something like that. That's just my guess.
Yeah, I gotta think that if you made a cannibal movie in today's day and age and you didn't have to cut anything to get into theaters, you probably screwed up somewhere.
Right. Yep. All right, so I guess that's pretty much the film, Eli Roth, Green Inferno.
Wait, I get my final say.
I was trying to save you, but go ahead.
My final say is there are hundreds of movies better than this one. Go watch one of those.
Very well. All right, so with that stated, Eric, why don't you lead us out?
Hey, thanks for tuning in to listen to us talk about Green Inferno tonight. Come back next week, we'll be talking about something else.